This episode of ENCast is also available in video format on the EN campus. For more information, please check the episode description.
Welcome to ENCast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Hello, my name is Roberta Balestrina. I'm a neurologist from San Raffaele Scientific Institute in Milan. Today, my guest is Professor Richard Dodel from Essen University. Thank you very much, Richard, for joining us. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, thank you for inviting me. I'm really honored to give a presentation here and to talk to you about our scientific interest. I'm a neurologist by training, but now I'm working as a geriatrician at the University of Duisburg-Essen. And I do research mainly on neurodegenerative disorders like Parkinson's disease or Alzheimer's disease. But one main interest of my research is public health and especially health economics.
Thank you very much. So today we're going to talk about the cost, both social and economic, of neurological disorders. Can you please introduce the topic of burden in neurological disease, both in terms of social burden and economic burden?
Mm-hmm. Normally, all of you know the studies of the global burden of disease. There are more than 30 or 40 papers now out, and in neurology also 10 to 15, which evaluated the burden of the disease. And mainly what you look at is years of life lost or years of disability or years lived in disability. And the main or the composite is dailies, disability adjusted life years. But on top of that, there is also a burden which is to measure the costs of a disease. So it's the economic burden, along with the epidemiology, the prevalence and the incidence of the disease. And that's the topic I would like to talk to you today.
Okay, perfect. I understand that you're one of the leaders of the cost of illness in neurology in Europe, the COIN EU project launched by the EAN in 2021. Can you please talk to us about this project?
Yes, the project was initiated by the EAN, and we are very thankful that they supported this project until the end. Yes, and it was started together with Günter Deuschel. He's a neurologist at the University of Kiel, and Uwe Siebert, who is the methodological guy in this project, and by my group at the University of Duisburg-Essen.
Okay. And how are you conducting the study, both in terms of methods, and do you have already some results you want to share?
For sure, I have results, yes. First, from a methodological point, there are not many studies which evaluated the costs of disorders on an international or a worldwide level. And there are mainly two papers. One paper is from Gustafsson, which was published in 2010, which evaluated 9 diseases and in 30 countries. But they are from 2010, and many has changed since this time. But there's a new publication out from the IJME itself, which normally publishes the global burden of disease studies. And this was published 2 weeks ago by Mitchell and his group, and they evaluated the diseases in the world in approximately 160 countries, and they evaluated the costs. But coming back to our study is a little bit different from the methodological point because we choose the data from the IJME for the epidemiology, but we searched all the data for the costs of neurological disorders worldwide and especially on the EAN member countries, which are about 47 countries in Europe. And then we brought this information together, except for two diseases, which took us a lot of time to deal with this issue, because we at the IJME there is no information on sleep disorders and there is no information on polyneuropathies. They are all merged in other disorders, but they don't or are not listed as a singular disorder, yes, sleep disorder. So this took us quite a time to bring this together. And then we brought the epidemiology and the costs together and calculated the costs per disease and costs per country. But in addition to, because we had a lot of countries where you don't have economic values, for example, in Moldavia or so, there are no costs or papers on the costs. So we had to imputate them. And to make this really more difficult is we choose another round to make sure that we have no bugs inside with four clinical experts.
Okay, this is very interesting. And have you found some differences between different diseases in terms of burden? Which are the most burdensome ones?
Yes, this depends how you look at that. The most expensive disease, if you look at a single country, is headaches. Yes, this is by far the most costly disease, not because it's itself very costly, but we have such a huge amount of people who suffer from headaches or migraine. The most expensive disease, if you look at the disease itself, it's multiple sclerosis in our study, and it's more than 12,000 euros which you have to spend annually for treating a patient with multiple sclerosis. But I have to mention that in our study, we are not only included, like in the Mitchell study, only the direct costs, we included direct, indirect, and informal care costs. Direct costs are the costs which you have to pay when you go to the hospital. Yes, for example, you have to pay for drugs and so on. Indirect costs are costs due to reduced labor force. For example, absenteeism, or you are ill and you can't go to work. These are indirect costs. And the informal care costs are the costs which stem from the situation that you have a caregiver, especially a family member or friends who take care of you and help you in daily activities. So these are the three main points, and these were evaluated in our study.
Okay, and do you believe that knowledge of this data, especially for conditions that are underestimated, could change healthcare and also policies?
Mm-hmm. That's why we did the study, yes, because we want to change something. Yes, I mean, from a clinical perspective, it's not very helpful. You can't heal someone with this data. You can't rehabilitate someone with this data. But you need it for four things. The first thing is you have to quantify what you have to pay. For example, if you buy a house or you buy a car, you have to know how much is the car. Yes, and you don't go to a shop or to an immobiliary and say, I want to have a house. So you say, I have this and this amount of money. And the same is, this is important that we know how much do we have to spend for a certain disease. The second point, which is important, is that by that you can plan in prospect how to spend the money. Yes. So for example, we have to look, is it more important, for example, to treat COPD or more important to treat Parkinson's disease? We have to make decisions on that, especially, for example, now the very expensive drug-modifying therapies for Alzheimer's disease, they will change our thinking about how we treat the patients, yes, but they are expensive, so we have to see how we want to spend the money. And the third point, which is very important, is funding. Because, I mean, the US guidelines and also European countries decided that the spending for funding should reflect the burden of disease. The question is what we call burden of disease. Is it the dailies or is it the economic burden? But for example, if we look at the data, which I have brought here, is that in the US, most of the 3/4 of the money goes into the cancer research. Yes. For example, in the treatment in cancer, 71% of total spending goes into cancer. If you go look at dementia, it's only 6% of financing funding in the UK or in the US goes into dementia. But for example, when we look at the dailies lost, we have in the UK 1200 for cancer and 3300 in US, but we have for dementia 1300. So it's one third or around one third, but we only spend 6% of our funding. So it's important that we have the data so that we can support that funding or neurologic disorders currently are underfunded.
But how can we ensure that economic consideration do not influence ethical care, and especially for more vulnerable patients or rare diseases?
That's a very important question, because money always let you forget that you have a patient there. Yes, at least when I look at my hospital, my Geschäftsführer, they always think only of financial background and not what happens to the patient. But I think if we have valid data, this will help also the healthcare systems and especially also the patients. For example, in our study, we found that, for example, a patient in Czechoslovakia costs about 1,200 patient median costs. Yes, if you go, for example, to Sweden, the median costs for treating patients with neurological disorders is about 6,200 euros. So you see, there is an uneven treatment in our European or in the European countries. And I think having good data on that, and I don't say that our data are the last one. They should be, again, a start for more in-depth analysis. And I think this is important, and we will impact if we look at the data and see where can we do some changes in Europe. Yes, I think that we can improve the treatment for patients, and especially patients who are in need of diseases, who are in need of acceptable treatment.
So you mentioned that there are some differences in between European countries in terms of cost per patients. What do you think is influencing these differences, and is there something we can learn from that, from this data?
I mean, this is a large number of differences. I mean, first the healthcare system, then the grand domestic product is different, yes, and we have different access to hospitals, for example, or different access to a healthcare system, yeah, and that's very difficult to just bring it together in 2 minutes. But I think if we go deeper and see where are necessities, yes, where do we have necessities to treat patients adequately, I think this data can show where shall we put the money in the future.
And do you see a role for the EAN or for national neurological societies in promoting greater awareness and integration of these findings into education? For instance, it's not very part of neurological education to talk about economics, or also advocacy and practice.
I think when you talk about teaching, I think every neurologist or every physician should have a basic knowledge on economics. Otherwise, you get lost. Yes. And it's not much you have to know if you want to talk to the economists. Yes. There's not much you have to know, but you have to have a certain background. I would suggest that this should be integrated in the training of the young physicians. I don't think that we should bring too much economics into our treatment, yes, and our care of the patients. I mean, the most important point is that we care for the patients, and we don't look all the time, is it okay that I spend this and this amount of money for this patient? Yes, this is especially in my profession, where I have geriatric patients, where often people say, why do you treat 92-year-old people? It's more important that you treat the 22-year-old people. And we have to think about where do we put the money in the future, because it will be narrow in the future how we spend and how we can spend the money for neurological disorders.
I see. And talking about neurodegenerative disorders, which are another focus of your practice, what are the most costly aspects of neurodegenerative disorders?
The most costly aspects, for example, in Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease are informal care costs. We have learned that approximately, I think, 28% of informal care costs are due to informal care for patients with Alzheimer's disease. This is, for example, different in headache. In headache, you need only minimal informal care or generate low informal care costs. But in Alzheimer's disease or Parkinson's disease, they are high.
And do you think this knowledge can also, considering new treatment, can somehow shape clinical practice, like the importance of early diagnosis or early rehabilitation in order to reduce these informal costs and improve autonomy?
No, I mean, a very important step would be prevention. Yes, I think EIN is going for brain health. Yes, this is a way of prevention too. And I think this is very important, especially for neurodegenerative disorders or all neurological disorders. Most of the diseases we can not heal, but adapt the development of the disease by adequate prevention, especially in the older ages, by special training, by special sports activities, by activities with other people. So I think this would reduce the costs. At the beginning, I mean, it would be a little bit more costly because you have to establish these programs, you have to offer these programs, and you have to include older people. But if you have that, then I think we will save a lot of money.
So it's kind of an investment.
It's an investment, yes, for sure. And the EIN has planned it not for single years, for a long period of time to do prevention for brain disorders, especially in neurological disorders. And I think this is a very, very important step forward to help these patients.
Okay, and so you think that economic evidence that you're collecting is somehow shaping research agendas in terms of priorities?
Yes, the problem is that you always need money. Yes, that's a problem. And by our study, we just want to show where the money goes at the moment, how it is reflected, and how we can change it and bring the money to the important parts where we have the maximum effect for the patients.
Okay, this is very interesting. And do you think that data on economic burden is influencing healthcare policymakers? But do you think that neurologists should have a more active voice in health policymaking?
Mm-hmm. I think we need more voices in, for example, in Europe, yes, from the EIN, but not only from the EIN, but also from for brain disorders, not only for neurological disorders, but for brain disorders. And I think also, for example, in Germany, where I come from, I just know my country best. So I think we need more persons who advocate for brain disorders.
Okay. And maybe just one last question. How can we evaluate very costly treatments for rare diseases? How do they stand in this evaluation of economic burden?
Mm-hmm. I mean, nowadays there are really effective methodological approaches to evaluate costs. Yes, you can do modeling. For example, in the study from the IIGME on the costs, they did modeling, which makes or provides good or reliable data. Yes, but to integrate this, this will be a topic, and I think we should not too much go into that as neurologists. I think it's more important that we have the time to treat the patients and get some or have collaborations, as we did with, for example, the UMIT in Tirol, where we have the methodologists and we are the clinicians, and bring this information together and then try to get more effective spending for our patients.
Thank you very much. This was a very interesting and constructive talk.
Thank you very much to you too.
Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
This has been EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EANcast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.